It is my pleasure to introduce next speaker, Dr. Najia Mahmood, Professor of Surgery and the Chief of Colon and Rectal Surgery at University of Pennsylvania. She'll talk about a subject that's something that we as colorectal surgeons wrestle often, is whether or not there's a benefit of resecting primary colorectal cancer in metastatic disease. So, please.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks, Constantin. Thank you, Dr. D'Angelica, for the privilege of the podium. And I think that you're going to find that my talk is a little bit more of the same in terms of a real hodgepodge of data and sort of a dearth or a lack of data around whether or not we should resect the primary tumor in an asymptomatic rectal cancer. You know, I don't have to go over this again, but suffice it to say the majority of stage 4 colorectal cancer patients end up in a palliative setting, and that's just the facts, but not all, and that's why we're here today. And I like to think of rectal cancer having very specific issues but variable scenarios. And when you talk about the presence of synchronous liver metastases with an asymptomatic primary or with a primary rectal cancer in general, you've got two sort of driving or motivating factors that drive your therapy, right? There's the liver. It's going to either be resectable or it's going to be unresectable. And you've got your primary, which is going to be either symptomatic or asymptomatic. In general, those are the two driving forces, your liver and your rectum, and those are that's the way I think about it. And those are the boxes I put those things in order to make therapeutic decisions. A lot of the data, as you will find, when you look through the literature regarding whether or not resectability of a primary colorectal cancer in the setting of synchronous disease is, or metachronous disease even, is an acceptable thing to do, is exceedingly heterogeneous, right? You know, you've got rectal and colon all mixed together. I think it's no secret or no surprise to anybody in this room that resection of colon primary is associated with reduced morbidity as opposed to proctectomy, which is associated with higher morbidity, functionally challenging circumstances, and a higher risk of surgical site infections or organ space infections that may limit or permanently derail the patient in terms of going on to adjuvant chemotherapy. So the concepts that we have to think about are the symptomatology of your primary lesion, right? And not just the primary, but also the liver, and whether or not you have oligometastatic disease. Ascites figures into that as well. Bleeding, obstruction, erosion into adjacent structures, and symptoms obviously attributable to liver or other metastases. Resectability of the primary, of the liver. Again, resectability and symptomatology are going to drive all of your decision makings when you see the patient in the office and they present to you and you review their films and interview them. And those are basically the parameters for resectability that you see there. So resectability, in my mind, is key to making a treatment plan, both at the in the liver as well as in the primary. And then you have to divide these patients up into treatment, you know, the patients who have resectable disease that you're going to treat with intent to cure, and unresectable disease, those who are you going to treat with intent to palliate. What type of therapy, timing of surgery, order of resection, all of these things you're going to hear more about later in the session. And what's the best palliation for those with unresectable disease? In those patients, obviously, the symptoms drive the therapy. Symptomatic disease, as I've said, symptomatic disease, the primary prompts the initial decisions and impacts long-term planning. In asymptomatic disease, which we're going to talk about today, the decisions are driven by the extent and burden of the liver and other metastases. Systemic treatment is paramount in both cases. So in both cases, there's going to be a need, whether done in the neoadjuvant or adjuvant setting, for systemic therapy. And treatment decisions must be individualized. If the last talk sort of brought home that point, clearly this talk, and I suspect the talks following mine will as well. None of this stuff happens in a vacuum or with you sitting alone in the office. All of it happens through multidisciplinary collaboration between specialties. including radiation oncology as well as medical oncology. Our treatment paradigm has changed over time. Just for a little bit of historical perspective in what we did with that asymptomatic primary, what you'll find is that over the years, and some of this is old data, but it tracks time kind of nicely. When you think about the number of patients who underwent colorectal surgery, chemotherapy, and hepatic surgery over a period of time, and tracking these incidents and outcomes, what you find is that as surgery and surgical techniques have improved, as our armamentarium for dealing with liver metastases has improved, and as our better chemotherapeutic agents have come online, we've had or enjoyed an increase in our median survival as well as our two-year survival. But look what happens with colorectal surgery. So when you look at the rates of surgical resection for patients with stage 4 disease, what you find is that they're pretty steady. They're actually higher than you might suspect. Or around 50%. In some cases, and depending on the country that you look at and the, you know, sort of the region, it's higher than that. So people are still resecting primarily symptomatic, but sometimes asymptomatic primaries in the setting of metastatic disease. Rectum is a little bit different story. There are not a lot of data around metastatic disease where the rectum is parsed out and you're able to look at it without the muddled effect of colons. But what you'll find is people are, in general, much less enthusiastic to operate on, do a proctectomy or operate on the rectum in the setting of stage 4 disease. So 50% of patients with stage 4 disease undergo resection of the primary, and that's pretty much stable. And if you track the data out further than, you know, in the last decade, you'll find that that's true. And use of chemotherapy has increased, obviously, as chemotherapy has proven to be more effective, and liver resection has increased far greater than this over the past 10 years. And this has all increased median survival times. The use of chemotherapy and liver resection, not resection of the primary lesion, seem to drive improved survival. So in stage 4, and that's very important to remember, chemotherapy and liver resection drive improved survival in metastatic colorectal cancer. So if you're looking to do a randomized trial and have it close early for lack of accrual, then please do a randomized trial around resection of the primary tumor in stage 4 colorectal cancer. People have tried again and again to get one of these to get a trial going to deliver meaningful results. And I'm going to tell you that all of these trials, as well designed as some of them were and are, have closed because of lack of accrual. So it's what does that tell you? It's a very difficult problem to study. It's very difficult to get buy-in from some medical oncologists and patients themselves, and it's a moving target. So some limitations to the data regarding primary tumor resection. It's retrospective with non-randomized treatment allocation, okay? So the data is hard to interpret. Retrospective data is heterogeneous with respect to location. There's risk for misclassification of patients treated with curative intent, inability to control for tumor burden or comorbid conditions, and the treatment assignment is influenced by underlying survival itself, or what we call survivor treatment bias. But a little bit of good news. Clinical tumor response to adjuvant chemotherapy alone, as you have seen. There is one study that looks specifically at rectal cancer called the BACCA study. And again, closed, stopped because of poor accrual, but not before 20 patients were randomized and evaluated. I think the most valuable part of this study is the fact that when you look over on the right part of the right half of the screen, all of those boxes represent individual patients. And it's measuring the size of their tumor. With chemotherapy alone, and granted this is FOLFOXIRI plus bevacizumab, you know, it's not an exotic regimen, but it's a little bit outside the box of what we use at many of our institutions. People get a good response. Well over 40, 50, 60% of people get a good response at the primary with chemotherapy alone. So that statistic you heard in the first lecture, only 8% of patients progress on therapy, is true. So you can go forward if you have stage four disease and give those patients chemotherapy, and you can be assured, almost assured, that the patient will respond at the primary. So you're not under-treating your primary when you pay attention to the liver. This all works together. So what's the role of rectal surgery in resectable disease? Treatment with intent to cure means resection of both sites, right? The burden in the distribution of the liver metastases and patient performance status drives the initial decisions. So this is, you know, don't pay too much attention to this. This is just the way I think when somebody with rectal cancer comes into the office who has stage four disease. I put people in these little boxes. And we typically start with chemotherapy, 4 to 6 cycles. We assess response after imaging and direct exam, and then kind of get an idea of the biology of the tumor, right? You know, there are patients with good hepatic and rectal responses, poor hepatic and poor rectal responses, good hepatic and poor hepatic and good rectal. So it's those are boxes to put patients on that then you can hang additional therapeutic interventions off of. And this works for resectable or unresectable disease. So it's complicated. Interval imaging and direct evaluation of the response is essential. There's no standard approach. Tumor characteristics and biology dictate therapy. These patients must be discussed in a multidisciplinary conference, as you've seen. So what's the role of surgery in an asymptomatic primary with unresectable disease? We want to avoid, obviously, obstruction, bleeding, bowel dysfunction, things that we worry about down the road with your primary. Avoiding primary tumor-related complications during systemic chemotherapy. You want to you don't want to risk operative morbidity and inability to proceed to systemic therapy. And the primary tumor response to systemic chemotherapy can be anticipated. But does this have an impact on survival? Does it have an impact on future complications for that patient as a result of the in situ status of their primary tumor? So against resection, the arguments, surgery-related morbidity delays therapy. Systemic therapy is safe in the setting of an in situ primary. I think that's true. Most patients with asymptomatic primaries never end up requiring surgery, and over 70% show regression at the primary with chemotherapy alone. For resection, prevents complications of the primary, okay. Better staging of intra-abdominal disease, I guess, in these days of great imaging. I'm not sure how valid that is anymore. And possible survival benefit. So what's the data? You know, we don't have a lot of data. That's the problem. When you look at the NSABP, C10, sort of look at what happens to these patients over time, what you'd find in terms of the primary tumor, what you find is that many of these patients have complications. Less than 10% of these patients have complications or need surgery, represented by that gray line, emergently as a result of their primary tumors. When you look back at meta-analyses of retrospective data as well as secondary analyses of the randomized clinical trials that we have, we find that there might be a slight advantage in terms of the timing of surgery, doing a colectomy first. There may be a slight advantage in doing surgery at all, but the results are really not statistically significant. When you look at resection versus non-resection of the primary tumor and its impact on survival, what you find is that patients overwhelmingly still do get resected in many of these studies, and that there does seem to be a slight survival benefit or bias for patients who have been resected. So in search of better data. So when randomized controlled trials don't exist, then I think many of us turn to the Cochrane reviews to try to look to see if someone can put together these meta-analyses that make sense. And when you're looking specifically at overall survival for resection or versus non-resection of the primary, what you find is that there's possibly a slight bias in favor of surgery. Again, though, there are survival biases, there's selection biases, and the data is murky, so you should keep that in mind. The margins are not great. So this is difficult to assess. Most of the data includes colon and rectal cancer patients. The lower morbidity of colon resection may influence survival statistics. There's no pure stage 4 rectal cancer data. All the data extrapolated from trials and retrospective studies in patients with non-metastatic disease. There might be a slight survival advantage. What about complications of leaving the primary alone, leaving it in there? So there may be a slight, you know, remember that the bar at the measure, favoring surgery versus favoring control is a little bit different. The scale is a little bit different there. So this is just for effect so that you can see that there's a slight favoring in terms of surgery, in terms of preventing complications. But those previous caveats apply. The conclusion was that surgery does not appreciably improve the complication rate. However, the data that exists out there in the world casts enough doubt that further study is required. Selection and survivor bias almost certainly influence the data. And as you've heard, obviously minimally invasive approaches, ERAS protocols, better chemotherapeutic agents, and better monitoring to assess progress has influenced our ability to intervene in a less morbid fashion. So how do we treat this special segment of the population that has complete clinical complete responders? So outcomes of standard TME after neoadjuvant chemotherapy and radiation and clinical complete response, the local recurrence rate is close to zero, and up to 93% of these people have an overall survival, a five-year overall survival. The selection criteria for watch and wait approach, there is no consensus. There are guidelines. Predictors of incomplete response after neoadjuvant chemotherapy and radiation are those that are listed there. Larger tumors, higher CEAs, clinical nodal disease. The outcomes, neoadjuvant CRT may lead to a CCR in up to 67% of patients. That's a clinical complete response. Pathologic responses are only enjoyed by between 15 and 40, and 40 is stretching it, percent of patients. A clinical complete response does not necessarily imply pathologic complete response. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because there are a fair number of patients that have good responses on chemotherapy. You're treating their liver or their distant metastatic disease. You still have to pay attention to the primary, even in cases where someone has a clinical complete response. You're not going to have that pathology to correlate it, and 30 to 50% of patients who have a clinical complete response will not have a pathologic complete response. So there's persistent disease 30 to 50% of the time. Survival in patients requiring salvage is less than perfect, and patients with smaller tumors are more likely to have a better clinical complete response rate. So the GRECAR-4 was a French trial that looked at stage 4 rectal cancer, and it sort of better highlighted the role for chemotherapy. It was basically a tailored treatment strategy for locally advanced rectal cancer based on tumor response to induction chemotherapy. And what they found, the A group was a surgery-first approach after neoadjuvant chemo, no radiation. B, C, and D all had radiation added on after an adjuvant chemotherapy approach. And what they found was that the chemotherapy was FOLFIRINOX. The study, again, stopped early because of low accrual. The rate of pathologic complete response was only 10% after chemo alone. So what you'll find is it's thematic. Chemo alone, the primary tumor will have a lower rate of clinical complete response than if you add on radiation. R0 resection rates were 100% in good responders and less than that in poor responders. Giving preoperative chemotherapy and radiation after induction chemotherapy appears to be safe, and it appears to augment and extend pathologic your treatment. Resectable disease, conclusions and future directions, just thinking about resectable disease, chemo alone, primary response rate is greater than 70% with 10% clinical complete response rate. The addition of radiotherapy increases your rate of your primary response. So if you're treating a patient long-term or it's going to take a while to get them to surgery, adding on radiation at the primary may not be a bad idea. It also increases resectability. Complete responders treated with negative circumferential margins. Complete responders treated with intent to cure should be counseled about the outcome differences between TME resection and watch and wait. Resection does not appreciably improve overall survival in this cohort, and it doesn't improve intra-abdominal complications. Complete responders treated palliatively should be counseled about the higher rate of local recurrence and watch and wait. And interval imaging and physical examination should be done religiously. The last slide, current data are inadequate to answer most questions. Treatment bias and lack of prospective data hinder the analysis. We need to answer the questions of colon versus rectum, right versus left. We need to look at quality of life, admission data, and need for other interventions along the way. Thanks so much.